Blog Talk Radio.
Power to the people, yeah. And it is so good to be blue today.
What
so
an upset,
good
huh?
To be blue. And you know something, I got to, you know, we got some gloating rights. You know, look, all the Dems wanted to go in last night, and we wanted the House, we wanted the Senate. Okay, we got the House. And that's 50% better than what we have. So we have control.
At least of half of it.
This cheese doodle that we have.
We were just watching it on
Facebook
Live.
Show,
he couldn't admit how bad it was, that he's so afraid.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
I'm really not surprised. You know, the funny thing is I was talking to people yesterday, and I was thinking, how is he going to handle if we had the House and the Senate?
Mm-hmm.
Who is he going to blame? He'll blame Obama. He'll blame Hillary.
And that's
he'll
what he's doing.
He'll blame everybody else. But the truth is right now, I think when everything settles, when he realizes, when everybody realizes, party's over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we might not have as much push as we wanted, but we got more than we had, and he's going to be held accountable. And that's really all that matters. And that's where we are today, Wednesday, on Blog Talk Radio. She's raising the bar. And we have raised a glass to over 100 women.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we're talking about, we're not just talking about, you know, white women. We're talking
about, it should have been power to the women.
But you got to look at it this way, too. Everybody elected this. We have the men who are certainly like-minded and don't find women of power a threat. They voted these women.
Mm-hmm.
So I always say, we get our strength by walking with our brothers,
yep,
who are like-minded and supportive and got us where we want to be. So that's where we are. We're the happy place at She's Raising the Bar. And, we are.
Sound that man in the back
we
over
sure
there.
We sure are. Well, he's a feminist. Let him stand. Let him applaud. It's okay. First, I want to introduce cast of characters.
Yes.
To person play. There you go. Sitting to my left, always close to my heart, is the lovely Elite Zeal.
Thank you so much. And sitting to my right is the wonderful and talented Lori Towers.
You,
I just did it. You want another one?
No,
here's another one.
Okay,
all right.
I thought we have a little. Well, it's better than a burp. You gave me a burp one. So I'm happy enough for the little that I get. But I think today's topic is perfectly placed.
Yes.
In the sense that, you know, I think, again, we obviously had the show arranged before we know what the outcome would be. And I was thinking about this last night. If the outcome was to the contrary, today's show would have been like, it would have been a little bit more depressing because we realized that the topic...
Either way, it would have been
the topic
counterproductive.
This show is platforming would have been a little bit more dismal because
mm-hmm.
you realize, okay, there's a lot of stuff that's getting away from us, a lot of civil rights, a lot of things that we hold dear and we've gotten used to, and freedom of love, freedom of expression, pro-choice. A lot of these things would be getting away from us hadn't the outcome been what it was last night. Because
exactly.
Honestly, if we didn't do what we did yesterday, we didn't learn. right. we didn't learn from everybody who was saying, well, I'm for Bernie and I hate Hillary, right. so I'm going to give this guy a shot. If we didn't turn out.
Well,
right
I was
today.
Always discussing with you how I am so, like, you know, I'm just like so, I'm surprised at humanity that
yeah.
they are accepting of what's happening these days. And we're, this is humans doing this
I
to
know.
Humans.
Yeah.
It's just, it's so sad. How do we do this to each other?
But now, see, this is, and I was thinking, believe me, as I was watching the returns last night, and I'm sitting up, and you're having a glass of wine, you're trying to make,
mm-hmm.
you're trying to not get too optimistic, but you're trying, you're happy. And I'm thinking, in my lifetime, I haven't seen anything like this, but this is probably the worst that we've seen, but look
oh.
a generation before when we had African Americans hosed down with fire hoses
yeah.
and we had the whites only fountains and no Irish need apply.
But that's the thing. We're afraid of everything going backwards.
But that's what I'm saying. So truthfully, we haven't, I mean, this is, as far as our recollection, this is as bad as it's gotten.
Mm-hmm.
But God in heaven, it's been worse than this. It's been, I mean,
well,
I remember
course.
Seeing it
getting,
on TV.
You know,
it just,
supposedly it's supposed to get better and better and better. But,
you
know,
I think as long as
seeing, you know, people that really, really are so into Trump and so into his ideas and his political
mm-hmm.
ways and his
mm-hmm.
mannerism, that to me alone shows there's crazy people out there. There's really crazy people
and,
out there.
And you know my feeling on this. This country, and I love this country, don't get me wrong, and there's a lot of wonderful things involved in this, but it was built on white male imperialism.
Mm-hmm.
Plain and simple. That's what it was. And that's what we voted in. That's what's scary to me. The
right.
fact that,
exactly.
okay, founding fathers, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
yeah but that was hundreds of years ago. Why did we vote somebody in who is by far everything reprehensible?
Because people wanted a change
yeah.
and they wanted to see a change, but this is not the change that we wanted.
No.
We did not want people that are a person that is racist or just mean to people, has no mannerism, has no political nuance at all.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what he's doing.
No, he doesn't. And we didn't know. I'm not saying us, because I always say New York is kind of in a bubble. We know who we voted for. We know where we lean. We're leaning more left than any other place, you know, in the United States. I worry about the Midwest. I worry about the people there where you get.
And those are the biggest states.
And that's
those
where
are the biggest states.
We have to make sure that, look, we have half the control now.
Yeah.
So we have to just make sure this never, ever happens again.
But I am very proud of my borough.
Let me tell you something.
Because
do you mind
my
me,
borough.
Do you mind me saying what borough you're from?
Staten Island.
Okay.
Staten Island. Because Staten Island was 90%
mm-hmm.
for Trump. And we came ahead last night with all the Democratic votes.
And you know what?
And that was a shocker.
I was speaking to people that live in Manhattan, and I was saying, you know, because people were getting a little down about what was happening. I said, you don't understand the fact that Staten Island has gone blue.
Mm-hmm.
You don't understand how big a deal that
only
is.
Only because they've seen what's happening in the last 2 years.
But that's exactly
the
but
problem.
But you know what? It didn't have to be that way.
No,
it
didn't.
Because a lot of people were co-signing
again, people
this.
Wanted a change, and
right.
they didn't know what the change was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So, and now they opened their eyes, and they've seen what's happening, and they see the truth.
And I have to say, that was the biggest thing. And, you know, God bless Max Rose. And just the fact that
and you know what's funny about him is that he doesn't talk about the president. He doesn't talk about anything like that. All he wants to do is his agenda.
I think that's a good
and
thing.
His agenda is what he's going to do. He's going to follow through on what he's
and
going
you know
to do.
And you know the president is going to trample him.
Of course.
You know
but, again, he's not putting
oh,
him down. He's
oh,
not
yeah.
putting him up. He says, that's not my thing.
You know what? Like Michelle Obama said, you know, when they go low, we go high.
Right.
And that's, I think that's a wonderful thing to keep close to your heart. It's just freaking hard to do. It's
right.
just because the natural inclination is to hit back
right.
when somebody is calling you out on something. But we don't, you know what, we have some gloating rights today, so we should just be very
oh, yes.
happy.
And today
you know, this is a wonderful show again,
yes.
like I said, because it's perfectly timed. And what I find fascinating, I was doing research on this, and we're going to have Ricky Ziegelman on, who's heading up the Millennium Fire. That's
yes.
her segment.
It's yes,
the
it is.
Viewing today. And we have Gwen Ellis, who wrote the play,
That's
Evelyn.
Right. Talented, talented boy.
And you know something?
You hear that, Quentin?
I heard of this, tragic, and I don't want to be a spoiler and tell people too much of what's going on in the play, but there was this tragedy surrounding this woman, and I was doing research on it last night, and I was just thinking, you know, I was looking at the age of this woman, and, you know, could have been Ricky, it could have been my niece, my nieces.
Yeah.
It could have been anyone that we hold dear, and it's you follow the transition of depression into, or the other way around, sexual confusion, depression, women's oppression. And here you are with a woman that, you know, couldn't find the wherewithal to say, you know what, I can get through this, but that was the time. That was the time, and this is going to be Friday night at premieres.
And that's what we're trying to avoid. We're trying to avoid that, my friend, to go back into that time.
That's exactly right, and that's why I said it would have been very, very hard to have this show had yesterday turned out very differently.
Yes, yes.
So
very
true. We're going to bring them both on.
Yeah, let's bring them on because I know they're on.
Bring them on.
Hello, Rick.
Hi.
Hello, Quentin.
Ricky Ziegelman and Quentin, welcome to
welcome.
The show.
Hello.
Let's give you a nice round of applause. Are you guys ready for Friday?
Yes, we are.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. How you guys feel about last night? Were you cool with everything happened? How do you feel?
I mean, obviously it would have been awesome to have both the Senate and the House, but the fact that we have half is still a really big step, and it's still a really huge win to have over 100 women in the office.
Ooh,
and the fact that Senate went blue is a huge win in my eyes. So I don't feel at all defeated, which is a good sign.
Yes, definitely.
And I hear there's still some there's still some tallies coming in. There's still, I mean, I don't
think.
Why
is that?
You know, it depends, absentee ballots and so on and so forth. They count that differently. But, you know, we're not going to get, there's still some Senate seats, but, you know, the Republicans are getting some Senate seats. We're you know, that's the
whole
thing.
Yeah, but we still got half the.
We have half. But like Ricky said, it would have been nice to have both, but this is good enough.
That's all. So
Quentin, tell me, I mean, and this is, again, I don't want to be the spoiler. This is definitely a darker, but certainly something that should be spoken about. It hits on, I think, so many different layers of what's going on, the chaos in society now. What made you land on this particular theme?
That's a great question. I suppose the best way to talk about this is where I saw the picture initially, which was I was just scrolling through Facebook, and there was an article that said was titled like 33 old-timey images you've never seen before. And as I was scrolling through all of these absolutely beautiful colorized pictures, because most of them were black and white, an artist had taken the time to colorize all of them, and one of those pictures just happened to be the picture of Evelyn McHale. And as somebody who has struggled with suicidal thoughts and depression and anxiety, I saw the picture and I kind of was just drawn to it, as a lot of people are. In fact, there's a woman who wrote a biography about her and had a very similar experience that I had in regard to like finding the picture, and it's striking that writer as something interesting, and it really just kind of strikes a chord, you know.
And you know what's funny? I became really obsessed with this like the past couple of nights, and I shared it with Aaliyah.
She actually just showed me the picture that I hadn't seen before of Evelyn McHale.
The most beautiful suicide. You look at it, and you know, again, the press doesn't like jumpers. The press is kind of an unwritten law. Don't talk about it because it's like you're worried about copycats. But as far as statistics, when people do jump to their demise, they're never as intact as this woman who all that's around her is a mangled piece
of she's like
metal,
in perfect condition.
And she is just like she's waking up in the morning. And mm-hmm. that doesn't always happen. And I remember last night I just kept going back to that picture. And I just, you know, your heart aches because you know the age of this person. And to think that this is the best that she could do. She wanted to make sure she ended it, and there was, you know, 89 floors or whatever mm-hmm. it was. Quentin, you would probably know better than me.
86.
You know, you're not just going to break your neck. You know, you're out.
You're dying on the way down.
Easily.
Yeah. I think one of the most extraordinary things about Evelyn's case is, I mean, she was the fifth person in a 3-week period to jump from the 86th floor observatory. And it's just like there's a bunch of random things that makes this scenario even more interesting. Like the car that she landed on top of, the driver had just left the car. You know, like had he been there, she would have killed him.
Yeah.
And then the story would have turned into like, woman kills man in car.
That's exactly
right.
You know what I mean? Had the photographer not been there, what would have happened? Everybody would have forgotten. So there's just a bunch of things that add to the scenario that make it even 10 times more interesting than just a girl that fell to her death. And the fact that she's intact is no exception to that.
That was amazing in itself.
Yeah.
When I showed totally amazing.
And the funny thing is they have, I saw the colorized version. They touched it up. The colorized version, the black and white, obviously, was the original. And, you know, it's just, you look at them. You know, again, everybody looked older in those days because of the But if this was a kid.
Yeah.
And it just
She was 23.
Oh.
She was your age, Rick.
That's insane.
Well, I'm 22, but nice try.
Well, that's the thing. You look at it and just say, my God, this could have been, and this is.
Yeah, it could have been your daughter. It could have been your niece. It could have been anybody.
But again, back that's when everything was at its height. Women did not have, you know, any power as far as picking a relationship, let alone an alternative lifestyle. And that had to be the most strangling feeling in the world.
No, totally. I wanted to ask Quentin, how did you, I mean, I understand, like, you know, what made you start, you know, making this whole thing with Evelyn, but what made you, like, you know, how did you come up with the musical concepts and, you know, the storyline to go with it and all that? I mean, was there a lot of improvisation, you know? Tell me all about how you put together.
Oh, boy.
It's a lot, right?
It's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's okay. I suppose the best place to start is I actually usually write by starting with the lyrics of the show, and I usually kind of try to weave the, like, most important moments that need to be told story-wise in together with those songs that I've written. And, you know, it's also about, like, kind of figuring out what style you want a song to sound like. For instance, in the show, you'll hear tango, you'll hear upbeat jazz songs, but you'll also hear kind of more meaty, textural, kind of Gershwin-y songs that are, you know, ballads and things like that. But it's about finding the right mood and the right moment. I mean, there's a lot of thought that goes into it, but I guess improv is kind of the best way to put it, more than anything.
No, I think it's wonderful because this is going to be the third time I've seen it, and every time I see it, it gets better and better, and it's just weaved into different ways. You know, the storyline changes a little, but it's really intact. It's just, it's wonderful. It's really wonderful.
And you know what, I'm thinking, you know, with a theme like this, it would be, as a musician, I'm thinking it's all minor chords. But the fact that he's put in a tango, I mean, that's pretty daring right there. But the thing is, you have to show a lighter side of life because this woman did have some moments in her life that were light and loving and so on and so forth, and it wasn't all depressive.
Right.
Well, I think that that's an interesting point because I don't remember who said it, but somebody from the cast of Hamilton said that you already know that Alexander Hamilton is going to die at the end.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can kind of come up and create a world for Alexander Hamilton that, like, you know, that is interesting and full of life, and you also have to find those moments that are exciting and vivacious, I guess.
Yeah.
But
mm-hmm.
that's the same situation with Evelyn, is that you already know that your main character is going to die at the end. So how do you keep it from being, you know, like a drudgery? You know, how do you keep it from being droll and boring? You have to find those moments of light and those
yeah.
moments of life that people can connect with. And I think that that's something that my actors are doing an absolutely fabulous job at bringing to the
yeah.
table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Because that's the thing. It's just, I mean, going in, it's a somber tone.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, if you keep an audience there, you kind of lose the audience, and you're kind of losing the point of what you're trying to bring around. You're
mm-hmm.
trying to frame somebody's life the right way. And, you know, again, we're looking at this person's life, 23 years old. At 56, I'm thinking, my God, she hasn't lived. But she has lived in her 23 years.
Yeah.
So you have to represent that well, I think.
And I think people that, you know, basically have depression
yeah.
live a very dark and
yeah.
long life because they live in their head a very long time, you know. They're constantly, like, recreating life and recreating their life, you know, different scenarios in their life. It's just different, I guess, in a depressive mind.
You know, Elite, and this is why you're with me, because
what?
That's the next question I want to ask.
Go ahead.
Do you think, now, with all the research I did and anything that I know about the show, do you think it was actual, quote, clinical depression, or was it sexual confusion and suffocation and oppression, which is enough to get you depressed?
Right, sure.
That's what I'm saying.
Sure.
So either of you answer that one.
I think that we are comfortable with saying that it's kind of a little bit of both and everything and nothing at the same time, because
yeah.
I think one of the big things that we take away from Evelyn is the biggest question that we get is always, why did she do it?
Yeah.
You know, you watch this hour-long musical and then you still don't kind of know, and I don't think you're supposed to know. You know, nobody ever knows why somebody kills themselves.
Yeah.
It's an internalized thing. It's a personal thing.
Yeah.
And we constructed this version of Evelyn that may or may not be like the real Evelyn, because we only have so much information on her. So though a lot of it is real, a lot of it is also fictional. And we, you know, are trying to pay a good homage to the real Evelyn while also keeping this image that we have of her separate.
Well, also, we like to think of Evelyn as an every woman, and in that regard, it, like Ricky said, it just kind of ends up being open-ended. Like, the story of an every woman can be that it is whatever you make of it. So if there are people who decide that it's because of her sexual orientation, identity issues, or if it's because of depression, which that's doing research, it's possible that she would have had like a bipolar disorder, or if, you know, people can also agree that it's both too, or they can make their own conclusions based on the things that they see in the play. But I don't think that it's supposed to be definitive, and it certainly isn't definitive on my end either.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's well, also, like, think about people that are depressed. They don't really have a reason for it. There's just something wrong. There's something
yeah.
like there's a chemical imbalance that they can't
mm-hmm.
explain.
Right.
So how are we supposed to explain somebody else's reason for depression if we can't even explain our own?
Exactly.
And you know, to Ricky's point, I mean, again, I'm always of the mindset, suicide, of course, you know, if a friend of mine came to me with suicidal, you know, thoughts, I would do my best to get them into care and try to make sure that they felt insulated enough not to do that. But then the other part of me is like, it's a personal choice.
It is
a very personal thing. And the truth is, anybody who has, you know, strong suicidal tendency, you're going to do it. You're going to do it whether you're talked out, and this is it. It's just
and they usually
happen.
Say that people that are suicidal never talk about it. It's always a personal thing.
It's a personal
it's
thing.
It's withheld to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody tells anybody anything about
yeah.
suicide.
Yeah.
And that's when it happens, people are so shocked.
Yeah.
You know, why did she do it? Why did he do it? Oh, my God, he
mm-hmm.
seemed so happy. What happened? So it's a personal issue. It's
and
a really personal
the,
issue.
The case, because my husband worked in a psych ward
mm-hmm.
for a good amount of years, and usually the last day of their life is when you're the most euphoric, because you have the exit plan, because you know that this is what you're going to do, and this is your last day, and you're making all the connections, you're doing all the right things, but you know you have your ticket out.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's like, do you talk somebody off? My thinking is, if you want to go, if you have a terminal illness, whatever, it's your choice, and nobody has a right to damn you for it.
Man, they always call it a selfish act, but I don't think it's a selfish act. It's your life to do what you want to do with it. You know, of course it's going to hurt if it's a loved one, it's a close person to you, but it's somebody that has an issue of being alive. They don't want to be here no more.
And it's so funny, because I was reading about Evelyn said that she'd wanted her body cremated because she didn't want anybody to see her, and her body was intact.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't any of the,
right.
And I remember seeing pictures of the people that jumped from the towers, and, you know, on 9/11, and you're not the same person
that anybody
would recognize. But this woman, oddly enough,
it's amazing how she was beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys seen the picture. How beautiful was she?
Yeah, she was great. I think that there's, like, a really big difference between wanting to die and wanting to disappear. And I think that Evelyn genuinely just wanted to disappear, and that's why she wanted her body cremated. She didn't want a remembrance for her. She didn't want anything. She just didn't want to exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that there was somebody standing at the bottom waiting, not waiting, but pretty much waiting to take a picture of her is just crazy. And the fact that we, you know, 50, 60 years later are still talking about her and doing a musical about her is insane to think about.
What do you want? I'm sending this to either of you. What do you want people to walk away with on Friday night? What do you want them to take away from this production?
Oh, wow. I think more than anything, I want people to walk away with a sense of awareness, first and foremost. Awareness of their friends and loved ones and even themselves who are dealing with issues with depression and anxiety and things like that. But I also think that people should walk out of the show with a sense of joy and happiness for life.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the thing that we focus on in the show is Evelyn's life. We don't really focus a lot of emphasis on the actual death itself. So I think that because suicide aside, any of us could die at any moment, you know what I mean? So it's about appreciating what you have when you have it more than anything. And that's what I'd like people to walk away with.
Well said.
Yeah, I think so. And again, like I said, with the heaviness of theme, but, you know, you have to look past all of that because, I mean, one does not eclipse the other. I mean, you could have joyfulness and you could have sadness and both exist in the same reality. So
mm-hmm.
I think that's what's great.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to seeing the whole show.
No, I can't wait.
You know, because
I
was just there for little bits and
mm-hmm.
pieces. But, yeah.
Did you guys have more rehearsals after Monday?
No, we didn't.
No.
We kind of finished up our rehearsal. And then we have a 2-hour rehearsal the day of the show, and then it's showtime.
It's showtime, yeah.
So is this just going to be one time, or you think you're going to bring it on a bigger run?
For right now, it's just this Friday at 10. Dixon Place kind of made it seem like if we do well, there's maybe a possibility for me to have it on here. But for right now, it's just this Friday at 10, and then after that, it's kind of back to the drawing board on editing and rewriting for Quentin and editing for me.
Now, why would you rewrite and edit when it's pretty much complete? I mean, how do you go about to sell this to, like, say, Broadway or off-Broadway or stuff like that? Why would you? I mean, I think it's perfect the way it is.
Well, the requirements at Dixon Place were that the show be a 65-minute piece,
mm-hmm.
and as you know, the show used to be a 2-act, and ideally we would like to bring back other things that are missing. What was great about the Dixon Place project is that having a 65-minute time constraint, we had to find what was essential to the storytelling.
Sure.
And now we can add some other things back in if we want to. But, you know, I'm not sure. We'll see how audiences respond this time around to see whether whether adding things back is even necessary.
And every time we finish, you know, sometimes people are like, hey, I didn't understand this. And we're like, okay, great, that now we know, and we can make that stronger for next time so that you do understand it. Or you know, hey, I'm having trouble, you know, really getting the whole thing. Or people are like, I missed this element from the old version, and I wish that was back. And we're like, okay, maybe we can find a way to put that back in.
Bridget, yeah.
So, I mean, there's always spots that we can work on and make better and stronger.
And we're also definitely trying to expand a little bit more on Evelyn's lovers in the show. And for instance, her first love in the show. I won't spoil anything, but her first lover in the show is it happened so fast, and because we only have 60 minutes to present the show, so we would love to have more time to spend with those characters together.
Right. That was my next question. Do you have a hard time telling the entire story with time constraints like that? Because that's tough.
Initially, it was difficult at first, but it actually ended up becoming a major relief because I was able to get rid of so much crap that we didn't need in the show anymore.
Okay.
So while it was difficult, it ended up being one of the most beneficial things for this process.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, one of my, and I don't know if you two have ever seen this, but there's a classic movie called, and I don't know if this is the way the trajectory is going to go with this show, Sunset Boulevard, which I think the beauty of the movie is, the beauty of the film is, it starts with someone who's dead,
mm-hmm.
and he's lying in a pool and he was killed, and then somehow you forget that within the next 90 minutes, and then all of a sudden, you go back to, oh, that's right.
Well, that's
this
how
is,
Evelyn. I don't know how Evelyn is going to be this time, because every time I've seen it's different.
Because that always,
right.
And I've seen that movie. And if you haven't seen it, you both should see it, because you become so immersed in
everything else. And then you forget the beginning.
And the live character and his interactions. And then all of a sudden, you're in the last 10 minutes and you realize, he's gone. And that's
right.
See,
well, the beauty of seeing this place a couple of times is it's different every time,
yeah,
but it's the
now,
same story.
Yeah.
But it's played out differently all the time.
Which I think is brilliant because
but don't tell us. But
no. But I think it's just,
no. I'm
it's
saying
just,
to them,
it's
don't
just
tell
great
us.
Great, because you lose yourself in the character,
right?
And you lose yourself in everything that's going on, that you completely forget what came before, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh crap!
Right.
That's
right. That's
right.
She died.
That's right.
He died. That's
so
right.
that's brilliant,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. We're dealing with these millennium brilliant girl people, you know?
Right, I love
girls,
it.
Boys, everybody.
Yeah, and
amazing.
You know what I think is the most important thing is the awareness of the deficit of compassion that we're having now, which has been happening for the past 2 years. And I think that bringing forward things like this, and I always say, you know, in the city, we're preaching to the choir. This is how we feel. We're pretty much a pack of people in a tribe that rides the subway together every day, and we're okay with each other's differences, and we're applauding, you know, marriage equality, and we accept each other. But go elsewhere in the world, and it's a very different thing.
Yeah, but,
so,
but it's all the same pack of people.
Yeah,
we're all human
beings.
That's the thing that gets me. We're all the same people.
That's why I love that younger people are stepping up. Because, again, our voices are going to fade eventually. Eventually.
Yeah.
And there's a young awareness of things that really matter. And it's really not as much making money as it is allowing human beings to be human beings and love who they want and marry who they want. And that's it.
Right.
And power of choice.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think one of the most important things about us doing this show, like, regardless of the story, is the fact that we're just, like, a bunch of kids that just want to make art, and we got together on our free time and put together a full-length musical for almost no pay, because if it was about the money, none of us would be here. And we just wanted to make art and do this in a climate that isn't really allowing us to do that, because everything's just shutting us out. And we have a voice, and we want to be able to use it, and here we are. And we're telling this important story, and it's a new work, which doesn't get done very often in the, like, musical theater world, especially right now when everything on Broadway is commercial, like Frozen and Mean Girls and SpongeBob and et cetera. It's all based off of TV shows and movies. And finally, we make something that is, you know, close to historically accurate and has a really important story with brand new music and just a bunch of people that want to create art together.
You just got to keep pushing it, because it's going to happen. And you just, you keep your voice and you keep it loud, because your voices are what matters right now. Our voices are already heard. They're just in the background right now. You guys are the most important thing that's living on this earth right now. And you really, really need to make a stand for us. You really do.
And, you know, what I think is the beautiful, I mean, you think about the Depression and how people would go to the movies to escape.
Mm-hmm.
And people go to theater for that theater experience of the musical and blah, 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 and feeling good as you leave. But there's something to be said about art that makes a statement. And this is what's important.
I think what art is a statement.
It should always be.
It's always a statement. It's not like, and you're right, Rick, everything else is a commercial thing.
Yeah.
Just commercials replayed. It's like a redoing an old song into the new song. It's all the same. It's all the same.
And, you know, there's a place for that. That's fine. If you just really want to go, you want to take your kids and just forget about your boss that's bothering you, and you just want to enjoy the hour and forget about life for a while, wonderful. But there are important things that you need to hear, too, and both could exist in the same universe.
This is real life.
That's what I'm saying.
This is real life.
That's what I'm saying.
It has to be put out there.
That's what I'm saying. They both could exist in the same universe.
Yeah.
And it's important for people to say, you know what, this is great. I want to see this now, but I know that this is there.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because I think we live in a world where we kind of either over-medicate, over-stimulate, and just, like, reality shows, and we forget about, you know, the core of everything that either makes things one way or another.
It's true. Very true.
And that's why I'm looking forward to the show.
Yeah, definitely.
And the acoustics.
So are we.
And the acoustics in Dixon Place seems fine.
Yes. I mean, it was perfect. I mean, you guys sounded great the other day. Really good. And you had no mics, no nothing. Are you going to have mics?
No, we're not going to have mics. Dixon Place only had one body mic. So Evelyn was mic'd, then.
Really?
So we're going to do the whole show without mics.
Oh! But you guys, you know, you got such ranges, all
you
of you.
You
could do it. So.
Times we've done the show, there have been no microphones. So I don't think it'll be an issue.
That's crazy, though.
Yeah.
But there's going to be a live band, too. How many pieces?
Three pieces.
Three pieces, so.
So it's going to be the piano. What else?
It's a piano, and the pianist is doubling guitar and accordion. And then we have a second keyboard that is doubling melodica and harp. And then we are also have a third piece who is a bass guitarist and a violist.
Very nice.
Wow.
Well, you know, it's got high ceilings, but not that high. The acoustics can be great in that.
They sounded wonderful the other day.
I totally agree.
I heard you guys perfectly from up there, you know, where I was on top, so it was perfect.
That's good.
Yeah, so I wouldn't worry about that.
Before you guys leave the show, is there anything else you want to hit on, if you want to hit on?
Yeah, you want to say anything?
Anything that we didn't mention that you want to say about the show?
Come see it.
Thank you, Ricky. Thank you so much for your help.
Send the
Thank
money.
You,
you know, it's only $15. Maybe just buy a cheaper dinner instead and come see our show. I think it's really important, and I think it's worth your time and worth your money to come see it.
It makes a statement. It makes a statement.
Yeah.
So, you can buy tickets at dixonplace.org/Evelyn.
You can also buy them at the door.
Okay. Okay.
Honestly, where can you get entertainment? Live entertainment for $15. I challenge
Dirt
anybody
cheap.
Who's listening,
Dirt
347-857-1867, tell me if you could find a better deal in town. Dixon Place is a great house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have great restaurants all around you. What is the problem? $15.
Perfect night out.
That's nothing.
Perfect night out.
Cheapest shows on Broadway, what, $75?
Yeah, plus service charge, yeah, plus
all
tax.
In the nosebleeds.
Yeah. And I have to tell you, like I said, I've seen this show twice. It's an excellent show, so everybody's got to come out and see it. Everybody's going to come out to see it.
And I think all ages, right? I would say all ages.
There's no age that couldn't see it.
It's thought-provoking for everybody, I think.
It really makes you think.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Quentin, Ricky, we thank you for joining us.
Again, give me the website.
You.
The website again?
It's at www.dixonplace.org/Evelyn.
Okay, and then we're going to put everything online.
And we're
going to
put
again.
Everything on the Facebook page tomorrow. And we'll be there.
We'll be there
cheering you on.
We look forward
to
seeing you.
Thank you so much, my darling.
And good luck, guys.
Good luck.
Thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Thank you for joining
you.
Us.
Love you guys.
Love you too.
Woohoo! I'll see you Friday.
That's going to be a heavy show, huh? I think that's great. Like I said, as I was doing the research on her, I just kept picturing. And that's a movie that you must see, Elyse Eagleman, Sunset Boulevard.
I think I've seen it.
Oh,
I'm not sure, but I think
Gloria
I've seen
Swanson
it.
Gloria Swanson as Norma Desmond.
I think I saw it. But again, this
Academy
is the way it
Award.
Starts.
Her only Academy Award.
That she's dead, they find her dead, and then the story goes on about her life.
Yeah.
So it's basically almost the same way.
Yeah.
Because now I'm thinking about it, it was done that way. Both
and I think
times.
That's a great, you know, and I think that the testimony to the script and the performers is that you forget where you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you forget that, well, I was here. Because you end up over here and you say, oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, right. And then all of a sudden, oh, my God, that's right. And that's the brilliance of a good script, a good director.
Yep.
And, you know, a powerful theme. Yeah. So just, you know, it's amazing because, like, last night when I was looking up all these pictures and everything, it's just amazing how, you know, if you look at the picture. Again, it was in Time Magazine, a beautiful suicide, which I go back and forth. You know what? There was something about that I think was reckless. I mean, a beautiful suicide, you're kind of exploiting somebody who was depressed.
Well,
okay.
It's a beautiful suicide.
Uh-huh.
That's selling the picture.
I understand.
That is not knowing exactly what was going on behind the scenes.
But now here's...
They don't know who she is.
Look,
they don't know what she was going through.
Suicide is suicide. Doesn't
matter
what prompted it.
Exactly. But any title you see is a selling point.
Okay. Now, this is... I guess I should have brought this up when they were on. There's this unwritten law that, if you notice, so many suicides happen during the day. That never make the daily news, never make the Times.
No. It's a dirty word.
There are no pictures.
No.
For a reason.
No.
So, see, this is why there was one part of me that was saying, as beautiful as she looked, and it's funny because the metal around her almost looked like a waterbed, and it looked like lush sheets. And I'm thinking to myself, by taking the picture, aren't we infringing on somebody's personal rights of death?
Right.
Let me ask you this. As a photographer, would you have taken the shot?
Of course.
You would have taken the shot?
Definitely.
Really?
Not for the money. For the actual, just taking the emotion of what's happening at the moment. What I take shots of, I love to capture beauty. I love to capture, you know, whatever I'm capturing, you know. It tells a story. Every picture tells a story.
Right.
So if that picture told of a story of a woman that was a beautiful woman that didn't have a beautiful life, you know? You know, she could be beautiful, but everything else was ugly in her life.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just, you know, it has nothing to do, again, with money. Because it would just have to be, I'm there at that moment, I'm taking a picture of a woman that killed herself. What is the story behind this woman? This beautiful woman that looks beautiful on a mangled car.
Yeah.
You know, it tells a story.
You know what I remember? When John Lennon died, you probably remember this.
It wasn't that
Mayor
old.
Koch, no, Mayor Koch fired the person who went into the morgue and took a picture of him on the slab.
Well, nobody
it
wants
was on the
to
New York,
see
no, it was
that.
New York Post. But the thing is, after that, it kind of stopped everybody from thinking that that was a cool thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, his thing was, there's a wife that's still alive, there's a son, that there's people that love him that are still alive.
Right.
And to do, and it was, I remember it was the front page of the Post. Which
they put that picture up on the Post?
Oh, you don't remember that?
Oh, I don't remember that.
Oh,
no.
I have it.
Do you?
Oh, I have it. I have it.
I don't remember seeing that.
And it was, you know, you don't want to be too graphic, but a gunshot victim. There's a lot of stuff that has to happen.
Yes, of course.
So they certainly.
And also in death, the longer you're dead, the worse you look.
Right.
Okay. So if she just fell to her death, boom, and then somebody snaps a picture at that moment.
Yeah.
If she would have stayed there for 2 hours or 3 hours, she would have never looked the same.
Of course not.
Never looked
the
same.
Of course not. Of course not.
You know, death, you know, morphs out your whole body. I mean, everything changes.
It's so hard.
So it's a little different, you know, going to see taking a picture of somebody on the slab in a morgue. That's a little gross, a little morbid, don't you think?
You know, see,
I would never do that.
I'm wrestling with my conscience on both. I could see what you're saying about there's some sort of intrinsic artistic value about freezing that time in somebody's life that, again, their
It's their death.
Right. Their angst had brought them to that. But there's this one part of me that struggles with invasion of privacy, and this is a very personal choice that somebody had. And they wanted to remain anonymous. Although, again, when you go that way, you're not anonymous.
No.
It's
exactly, because you're doing it in the public.
It's a public display.
Exactly.
It's not
and,
like,
you know, being what, you know, since I've been photographing a lot, it's very hard invading people's spaces.
Yeah.
And I'm just not that person. I don't want to get in front of somebody. Like, I'm giving you an example. When I went to the Spooktacular, I didn't want to take pictures of those kids, you know. I didn't want to take pictures of the kids and the parents. That's invading in their privacy, you know. It's their time.
Yeah.
Their time of going out and enjoying, who am I to capture that, you know, and then putting it out there in the world.
Yeah,
didn't snap one picture. It's not my business to do that, you know. You know, that's why photographers get paid to take pictures of somebody that comes to you. I want to take pictures this way.
Yeah.
I want to take pictures that way.
Yeah, yeah.
So there is a huge line of invasion of privacy.
Yeah.
Huge line. But if you're jumping off the Empire State Building and you're going to your death and it's right there in front of you, what do you expect to do?
See, you know, that's the thing.
That's the thing. If you have a camera in hand, that's the first thing you're going to do.
See, now, my thought is, and I'm probably digging too deep here, the observation deck of the Empire State Building was, Chrysler Building never had an observation deck. I'm trying to think of buildings that
I've never been on the Empire State Building thing. I would love to.
Well, we could go, but I'm just saying, I'm trying to think of things that were reciprocal in structure that you could go on. Again, later, 1970.
The World Trade Center had that.
But that was 1972. But that's what I'm saying. And they had it, they already had it, because I worked there. They had it all sectioned off.
All of it. Yes, I remember, because there were a couple parties up there.
But I'm trying to think back then, what other building, if you were so inclined to say, it's going to be a building, I'm going to jump off a building, and I want to make sure it counts. That was, I think, the only one that
at the
had
time,
an observation deck that you
that
could say.
That was at time.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to give it away, and I don't want to, because you didn't see it, but there was a reason why she was there.
Okay. So it wasn't
planned
that,
to do that, you know.
Okay, then that makes sense.
Right.
Although that would have been the only, you know,
mm-hmm.
other place in town.
Well, you know what? If you're going to jump to your death, you could do it on any big story dirt building.
But you have to get in there. You know what I'm saying?
No, you could live in a big story building for all you know.
If you live
yeah,
in a
you know
two-floor
walk-up.
No, you
know
what
no,
I'm saying?
That ain't
going to
work. You're going to
skin a chin.
You're going to break
your
leg is all you're going to do.
That's all you're going to do. Bruise your nose.
Exactly. So.
But, yeah, it just... It's funny because that this whole thing was staying with me, and it kind of leaves you with this very, very dark,
kind
of sad.
And you will after you see the play.
Yeah.
You really will because it does stay with you. It really does stay with you.
And like I said, you know, thinking about Ricky's age,
mm-hmm.
you know, she's not quite there yet. But I think about my niece, who's pretty much her age.
They're all the same age, a couple of months away.
And yeah, you just think, my God. But
they're young.
See, back in those days, though.
You lived a full life at that age.
You got married at 18 because your life expectancy was 60?
Yeah.
62,
it's
something like
now.
That. You weren't...
Hopefully nowadays you live till 80, 90
yeah,
years
yeah,
old.
Yeah, yeah, that's
know?
The average, I think. But back in those days, you just didn't, you know... You lived a shorter life.
Mm-hmm.
You got married early. You had kids early, and you know that was it. So, that was I guess 23 was our version of 43, right?
Yeah.
But still.
It's just you know.
It's
tough.
Too soon to leave.
It's just you shouldn't leave. You really shouldn't leave. You know. Listen. Thankfully, I don't know about depression.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but seen it. I've dealt with people that do. It's tough. It's a dark area, and
you know,
I'm not in their state of mind to know or speak of it.
I think you know there's depression, which I think everybody has from time to time, and there's depression like that you can't, you're paralyzed. You can't.
It's a chemical imbalance. That's that.
Yeah.
And in the play. You'll see that it's her mother that, you know, guessing that she's got her mother's depression also because it is sometimes hereditary.
I know.
You know?
Yeah.
So, and it's so funny because I'm talking about depression.
Mm-hmm.
You know, depression basically is a chemical imbalance in your brain,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you have really doubts of depression, you know, really doubts
yeah.
of depression. But you say, you know, a lot of people deal with depression here and there and here and there. Basically, sometimes it's boredom
mm-hmm.
that you go through depression,
mm-hmm.
you know. It's like, what do I do now? You know, I'm depressed, da-da-da.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's just that your life is not going the way you want it
yeah.
to go, you know. And, again, you're going to stem back to boredom.
There's episodic depression.
Yes.
I don't think it's clinical
yes.
depression.
It's not
like
clinical depression.
From time to time,
you know, don't
I'm
put a name
yeah.
tag of depression
yeah, yeah, yeah,
on
yeah,
that
no,
because
no, no.
that's not depression.
That's just, look. My life is, you know, had a bad week. That's not
right.
depression.
No.
You're becoming depressed because you had a bad week, but
right.
it's not depression, which is chronic.
You
no,
know,
and
if you could snap out of it within
yeah.
2 days, you're not depressed.
But it's the not being able to get out of yourself, not being able to
no,
be
knowing
reached
that
by anybody.
I'm always sad.
Yeah.
Why am I always sad?
Mm-hmm.
Things are good in my life. Something
mm-hmm.
is wrong,
mm-hmm.
you know? So that's when you know something is, you know?
And I think that that's one thing.
And whoever is dealing with this, it's okay.
It's okay.
Really okay.
There's no shame in it.
There is no shame.
And I think that's one thing that should
absolutely
be
not.
Said about this. It's like, you know, if you're having problems with your life and you're starting to think that maybe not being here is okay, speak to somebody. Speak to whoever you find is trustworthy and is a comfort zone for you. And they will, if they can't intervene the way they should, they will get you to care.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what people need to, you know, there's help out there. Everybody goes through this. You're not alone. And I think that's the basis of depression is you alienate yourself from a lot of people and you feel like you're alone. And
you're
we
not
all know,
alone.
We all know
not
pain.
Alone.
We all
actually,
know pain.
You're in a boat with a lot more people
yeah.
than you think.
And we all know pain. We
mm-hmm.
all know abandonment and we all know suffering and we all know loss. That being said, trust somebody that you feel close to, and if they can't find a way out for you, they will find somebody who can. And I think that's the most important
mm-hmm.
thing that
mm-hmm.
people could think about now. Because this is, you know, and you've heard me say this, when people say we have a drug problem in this country, we don't have a, we have a depression problem. We have people that are self-medicating, over-drinking, over-stimulating because they don't feel the way they feel they should. And that's the problem. And I think we over-medicate, too. I think sometimes, some, you know...
Well, that's the problem.
You're
feeling
depressed.
You go,
it's okay.
Right.
Let it go. You, tomorrow's another day. But when it gets into that...
When it becomes
deeper,
a lifestyle for you,
that's
a different story.
Totally
that's a totally
different
story.
That's a totally different story.
You know, when everything you know you do is, you know... Everything is okay.
Yeah.
Your life seems to be working, but you're not feeling like you're happy any time.
And I always hear... For people that are clinically depressed, there is this veil over you that causes you not to feel what you want to feel and just, like, numbs you. And sometimes, all of a sudden, that veil is lifted either with medication or something. Something pulls you out of it.
Somebody close to me. So it works. It really works. So
I think that's...
Don't be embarrassed to say it. Don't be embarrassed to get help. Just do it.
Truth is, we shouldn't be embarrassed to say anything. If we have people,
maybe
people, you don't want to announce it to the general public, but the people that are close to you, whether it's a parent, whether it's a member of the clergy, or anybody spiritual that you want to relate to, or a best friend, trust them and
they'll get you help.
Yeah.
Well, they'll help you.
And there's power in being able to see that you could trust people that I think is priceless. Because once you see that I could fall back and somebody will catch me, that is a wonderful experience because then you start to trust again.
Well, yeah.
And that's, I think, what we need to think about.
Trust is a very big thing, you know. Well, and once you, I mean, usually you do have people that trust, you know,
you trust
your family.
Yeah, yeah.
But you just, you know, just seek out and reach out for help.
And don't be ashamed of it.
Don't
be ashamed of anything.
These days, you know, everything is so out in the open. Why would you be ashamed of anything these days?
You know, unfortunately, there are sometimes...
You know, be ashamed if you bite your toenails, okay, at the age of 50. That's what you should be ashamed about.
You should be proud that you have that flexibility in hamstrings.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying.
But I'm just saying, that's what you should
that.
Be ashamed of. Keep that to yourself.
That's something, because a lot of marathoners can't do that.
No.
They don't have that flexibility.
But
in saying that, speak to somebody if you're having any episodes of depression, any feelings of oppression.
Suicide, anything.
Or you feel, well, now is not the day. Well, I'm going to say now it's not the time to say that, you know, I feel, you know, I'm sexually confused.
Yeah.
We're okay now.
Who cares?
Talk to this.
You know what?
Groups,
if you feel like it, go for it, and that's that.
And you know something? There's plenty of support groups. And that's the beauty of support groups. There's a support group for everything. So find one of them, and we are so linked to the internet. All you're going to do is Google, and you will be in
a group. It's as easy as ever.
That's a soft landing to
you. Ever now. It's so easy right now.
But in saying that.
What are you saying?
That was our show, and my soft landing is always the lovely Elite Ziegelman, who makes this show a ride without bumps. And we want to thank our guest, Ricky Ziegelman, for heading up her segment, Millennial Fire, and
Quentin Ellis,
who joined us today. And whoever is out there, and this is really, I'm not just saying that because we're going to be going, this is, I think, a really important thing to see now.
People are probably now, they're just promoting it.
No.
It's really a very important show to see.
I think if you're a parent, if you're a child, if you're a grandparent, this is going to resonate with you because it will be somebody you know. Possibly not as tragic an outcome, but we're all struggling, and the younger generation struggles more. And they could be enriched by the stuff that we went through, and we could help them along the way. So let's not judge.
And let's support them.
Let's not judge. Let's keep all that aside. Support them. Keep them healthy. They're our future. And in saying that, that's our show for this week. We're going to have all the information again for Evelyn.
But try to go out tomorrow on Friday night.
Dixon Place.
Tomorrow night, Dixon Place. in New York City.
A lot of great restaurants around
yes.
there.
Beautiful. I mean, it was, you know, Chinatown, Little Italy,
yeah,
a lot to see around there.
You have every cuisine waiting for
whatever
you.
Whatever you want down there.
Find some nice parking.
Take
after
the
7
day,
o'clock.
Walk around. It's just beautiful.
You have a good
and
time.
For $15?
Can't beat it.
You can't
you
go wrong.
You can take 4 people. Think about that.
$60.
Where can you go to a Broadway show for 4 people?
Nowhere.
For nothing. For $60.
And it's not commercial as Broadway. Broadway, you know, you got the big lights, your big music, but you know what? You've seen Frozen in the movies.
And you know something?
You've seen SpongeBob. This is a story
see
that needs to be told.
See this before it goes to Broadway.
That's what I say all the time before they're going to be $200.
I think so. So in saying that, go out. Make it a wonderful day. Reach out to people who are different from you, whether it's political differences, whether it's differences of faith. Try to mend the fences, people, because we're really all we have.
We're all the same.
We're all the same, and we really have to do it. And
do we all put the same pants on one leg at a time?
Somehow we forget that.
Do we all bleed red?
Well, honey, sometimes, somewhere along the line, we've forgotten all this.
I don't know
but
how.
But hopefully now... we remember. And Patti Smith is going to take us out with The People Have the Power.
People.
Thank you, Elite Ziegelman.
Thank you.
And
Lord
right
Powers.
After her will be Nina, God rest her soul, taking us the rest of the way home.
Go for it.
See you next week, people.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.